Hey, Fabi.
What's happening?
You know how there's so much going on right now everywhere?
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, of course.
So I really don't think we should be adding sexual and reproductive health to your care list right now. But guess what, Mimi? Planned Parenthood is here for you to ease your mind and give you the care you need with Planned Parenthood telehealth services.
And you know what? Planned Parenthood has been there for me in the past, and they're here for you too, wherever you are. Because they know care can't wait. Not now, not ever. Their telehealth services provide birth control information and care, STI testing and treatment, emergency contraception, and more.
Get care, ease your mind, and save a trip. Planned Parenthood telehealth makes it easy to reach an expert in your area by phone or video.
Set up a telehealth appointment with a Planned Parenthood medical professional by phone or video today. Go to PlannedParenthood.org/telehealth. The website, once again, is PlannedParenthood.org/telehealth. I couldn't say contraception. Oh my God. Okay, wait. That's PlannedParenthood.org/telehealth.
Así o más sencillo.
Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
sube, sube, sube.
Hello, hello, hello.
Kusho.
How are you doing, Babelito?
Very good indeed. How are you?
You know, hanging in there, doing my thing. It's hot as hell in Las Vegas. And so, you know, dude, like, I don't know how I forget every year how hot it gets here. It sucks. Why do people fucking live here? Oh, my God. It's kind of like our winter time here, you know? Like, you just stay inside because it's too damn hot.
Right. I know. Right now, Chicago is gorgeous. It's green. There's flowers everywhere. It's in the 70s every day. Occasional rain. It makes me want to live here.
Really?
Yes. I actually can. I think we have come to terms with that. That we're just like, you know what? This is a good gig, and this is a good place to be. We could be in the middle of fucking Trump Nation, you know? So, I mean, yes, the winters are fucking horrible, pero yeah, I like to stay in the house anyway, so it's all good. It's all good.
So are you still teaching at UIC?
Yeah, my contract ends in a couple months, and then quién sabe, we'll see.
So you're teaching through the summer?
No, I mean, I'm advising some like these. I'm in like two committees right now. I'm doing research. I'm doing writing. But my contract, my teaching ended in May, and my contract continues through August. So I'm technically still a visiting professor at UIC. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So you're gonna try to stay there after that?
Yes, that's the plan. We're trying to convince people that I am needed in the department, but it's not about the department. It really is about business. So everybody's cutting budgets. And so, as I mentioned last time in the episode, the first people to suffer are going to be the non-tenure track positions, and which has, you know, many junior faculties that have they don't have, you know, the tenure track, they don't have security. So son los primeros que se van. So even though I thought I had a contract ready to sign after COVID, it all went to shit. So who knows?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I hear that. Mm-hmm. I hear that. We're recording this, by the way, on June 17th for everybody, because we record a bunch of episodes ahead of time because who knows what's happening in the world right now, honestly. And you know what I want to say right now?
Mm-hmm.
I recently talked with my grandmother, and she's very religious, evangelical Christian, you know. And I said, Grandma, you need to pray harder. Jesus needs to show up immediately. He needs to show up yesterday. You know, it was so crazy to me that my whole life I feared God so much that the second coming of Christ was like doomsday. Like, it was the apocalypse. It's it. You know, like, you're just so scared. And I just want to stop hearing about that. And if there's anything that would be appropriate right now, would be for all these so-called Christians to just float up into the abyss right now and leave me here to burn in peace. Okay? That's all I want. I said, Grandma, Jesus should have showed up yesterday.
Bitch, Jesus has been coming back since 1492 fucking two. That's the reason fucking Christopher Columbus are right here, because he really thought that Christ was coming, so he had to prepare the rest of the world for his coming. That was a fucking excuse for the extermination. So I don't want to hear this bullshit.
Okay, if the earth was RuPaul's Drag Race, Jesus is Shangela, okay? She just keeps coming back, okay? And it never happens. She never wins, right? Come on, Jesus. We need you to go on All Stars and take the crown right now, okay?
Wow.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. I know that we don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race anymore because he sucks, but that's one of my guilty pleasures still. Mm-hmm. Because Jujubee is on All Stars right now. And
I love Jujubee.
Live for Jujubee, and she's a fucking shitster. And guess who else is on it?
Kiengwe.
Alexis Mateo is back on it.
Oh my God.
It's so good. Shea Coulee, she's gonna win. And Shea Coulee is incredible in it too. Mariah Balenciaga's on it. It's drama, bitch. It's good.
I believe it. To this day, I still think the best reading was by Jujubee.
Oh, yeah, she's the queen. Like, she's the shadiest queen. She said, Tyra, was your barbecue canceled because your grill is fucked?
I can go spelunking in there.
So good. She said, what was one of her reads? She said, Mayhem Miller, more like Meh-ham. She's good.
She's good.
She's wonderful. Okay. So on today's show, we're actually going to have Esteban of Chicano Eats. And I have an exclusive interview for you. But before that, I want to talk a little bit about like what it means to be Chicano and like kind of like the snacks associated with that. Because, you know, I feel like especially you, since you're like a Juarez kid, El Paso kid, like I feel like border food is associated with like Chicano culture in the United States. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, but I feel like growing up, because, you know, this whole thing of like, los Chicanos no son Mexicanos and bullshit like that. We didn't see our food like that. So like, comiéndonos un burrito de Winnie with fucking beans and chorizo and hot dogs cut in pieces in a stew, in a tortilla de harina, not de maíz. That was just Mexican food to us, right?
Yeah.
But does it get more Chicano than that? Like, I don't think so.
Yeah. And so if y'all don't know Chicano Eats yet, his Instagram is impeccable. Like, the photos are beautiful.
Right.
But what I love is, like, the mashups, you know? Like, he'll have, like, a cocktail inspired by, you know, horchata, or, like, he'll make a cake with mole, you know, in it, a chocolate mole cake.
Oh, it's girl.
It's those mashups that, they are so fucking delicious.
Oh, there's so much. Just going through his website, there's so much good fucking food.
Okay, we're going to talk about Chicano Eats, but let me tell you some Guatemalan Eats, okay? Because Guatemalans, I'll talk about this while you think of some other food that kind of falls into this kind of like cross-cultural mashup between like Mexican food and American food. But Guatemalans, you know, we love black beans, right? And one of my favorite Guatemalan snacks is black beans on bread, on white, like Wonder Bread. I don't know how to explain to you. It's like so nostalgic, but you have to make the frijoles negros like fritos when a country kind of specializes on one kind of bean, you know, there's several versions of it. You know, like Mexicans have like frijoles charros. You can make them into just like refried beans, frijoles a la olla. You know, there's all different kinds of ways. Guatemalans have like levels of how like runny the runny maybe is not the right word to use, but like the viscosity of the black bean paste, right? And so I like it. I like to make it almost like hummus because I like to eat chips and like dip it in there. You know, that's like my favorite kind. But if you ever go to like a Guatemalan restaurant or any Central American restaurant, really, Hondureño, Salvadoreño, how do you call, what do you call people from Belize?
Belizeanos?
Beliziano.
Como José. O no, es Feliciano.
José Beliziano. But okay, so for example, like for breakfast, we'll have like un plátano, like plátano frito or like steamed with some eggs and then the beans, and they're just a little bit runnier than the paste so that you can get your tortilla or your pedazo de pan and you can like dip it in there and scoop it all up with some crema and with like some cheese, you know, it's so bomb.
Yum. But
you know, a lot of times we didn't have the resources, or you know, we're in America, so there wasn't like fresh baked bread at the store.
We're in the US, not in America.
Right. I mean, even in Mexico, some places like it's
true.
It's easier to get a fucking thing of Bimbo than to get a fucking, you know what I mean? Like, right? Sí, sí, sí. Than to go to the Oxxo and get a pack of Bimbo bread instead of going to a bakery. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, get un bolillo, yeah.
Yeah, un bolillo. So you just take you take some white bread, and it only works on white bread because wheat bread is like, it's too flavorful. And you lombarras the black beans, and then you just sprinkle on top the powdered white cheese, and it's so bomb. It's so good.
In Mexico, they call molletes. Would you have like a slice of bolillo, le pones los frijoles refritos con un queso oaxaqueño arriba y un pico de gallo.
Oof.
I thought it was very border, but then I saw them in LA, so they're everywhere. Pero in the border, there's like las momias, which is basically hot dogs wrapped in bacon, and then le ponen todo, hasta el pinche molcajete, le ponen pico de gallo, le ponen cebollas asadas, le ponen chiles toreados. Yes. You know, like, the idea of having a hot dog just with mustard was so weird for me, because I'm so used to mayonesa, mustard, ketchup, all of that shit.
I'll never forget, like, the first time I went to a birthday party, and I was like, where's the mayonnaise for the hot dogs? And everybody was like... What? Are you crazy? And I'm like, what? You need to have the mayonnaise and the mustard and the ketchup and the pico de gallo. Like, I'm thinking like, where is everything? Where? What?
Right.
Yeah. My grandma, she would make us hot dogs a lot growing up. Because it was a fucking guarderia at her house. So like, she had to feed all of us, you know? So that was sometimes that was the easiest thing to make, right? But she always would put mayonnaise, and then we could put ketchup and mustard if we wanted on top of it. And that's just how I grew up eating hot dogs. Remember those hot dogs that used to have the cheese in the middle?
No. Did you ever have those? What? No.
Oh my God. Oh, my bologna has a first, middle, and last name, and the middle name is cheese. Okay. So.
Girl, espérate.
What?
In New Mexico, they have these hot dogs que le meten el chile asado como si fuera un condón.
What? Oh, my God. Un chile relleno with a hot dog?
Pretty much. Y luego ya lo ponen en el pan y le ponen todo el pedo. Bitch, it's so good.
Wow. Amazing. I've never thought about that.
It's amazing. It's fucking amazing.
A docking dog. Wonderful. Okay. So, I'm so excited to bring this interview with Esteban. I think we're just going to start the interview, and then we'll be right back. I had a soundboard. Wouldn't that be amazing if we had a Latinos Who Lunch soundboard?
Yeah, why don't you? Isn't it just like an iPhone app?
You know, I'm going to Google it because I really wouldn't even have to record the show because basically all I do is say catchphrases the whole episode. So, oh my gosh, Esteban, thank you so much for talking to me today. I'm just so excited about your new book.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Do you know how long I've waited to come onto your podcast?
Oh my God.
I've just been like, oh my God, when are they going to ask me? Every time I've listened to you guys, it's just like, it's always just been like chat, like listening to your cousin's chat.
Uh-huh.
It's like, those were the cousins I always wanted.
Honestly, girl, we ain't shit. I don't know why you're trying to be on this show, but honestly, I don't know why you haven't been on either. I think it's because we were like so about doing these interviews in person before, and now everything's changed. So now I'm just like, yeah, let's just call people up and talk to them. So
yeah,
I'm so happy that you could join us on Latinos Who Lunch, even though Babelito is busy today, so he can't be on the call. But
oh my gosh,
don't worry. We made a really nice intro and outro for you ahead of time. So we met a few years ago, and I knew about you because of your amazing Instagram page. It is just on point. The colors, the design, and then, of course, the recipes on there was what first attracted me to your Instagram. And then we connected through mutual friends, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We even met in person once. I remember that.
That was so random. And then we also bonded over having been in marching band.
Oh my
remember?
Gosh. Okay. Tell me, where did you grow up? Tell me about that.
I grew up in Orange County in Santana. Mm-hmm. I lived there until I was 18. And then I moved away for college, and I never went back. I've essentially just lived all over California ever since college.
Yeah, and I was reading in your book, Chicano Eats, Recipe from My Mexican-American Kitchen, now available for pre-order wherever you get your books, that you moved to like Humboldt County, right?
Yeah, that's where I did my undergrad. And if you've ever been to Humboldt County, it's essentially about 5.5 hours north of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's about 2 hours away from the California-Oregon border. So we were really isolated up there. And that sort of pushed me to start cooking.
Yeah.
Because the Latino population there just really wasn't that big. There were a handful of Mexican restaurants, but it was just like restaurants that catered to the white palate. Mm. And so it just made me really homesick to not be able to have access to any of that stuff that I was used to back home. And so I would give my mom a call every now and then asking for recipes. But I'm not sure if you've ever asked your mom for a recipe, but it's very cloudy because they just say, échale poquito de esto, poquito del otro, and then just see what happens. And for me, who was just trying to navigate their way in the kitchen, just didn't really work. And so that's where I started cooking, because of being in isolation, you know?
Yeah. My mom gets so mad at me. She's like, ay, ¿por qué quieres? Like, why do you want to know? Like, just come over. I'll make it for you. Because, and it's also this thing, my grandma's also like embarrassed, kind of, because she like doesn't know like how many cups or teaspoons of this. She's just like, just put some in there. They kind of get annoyed at me. So it's so interesting how, I think you mentioned in your book too, how this is kind of just like, it's just a tradition, an oral tradition, and like we just know how to do it from watching other people, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at how our parents grew up, they grew up watching their parents and their family cook, especially the women, and so I feel like our generation is sort of the ones that are starting to write down all of those recipes for them, because that's not the way that they learned how to cook.
Yeah. I want to know, like, did you go to school for like culinary school, or what were you going to school for?
the complete opposite.
Girl, what were you doing?
I really wanted to get into advertising, and that program wasn't offered at Humboldt. So I supplemented that by majoring in public relations, and then I did a minor in studio art, focusing in graphic design.
That makes total sense. That makes complete sense based on this impeccable book that I'm looking at right now. I'm telling you, thank you for the advanced copy. I'm pretty sure all of my cousins are going to order one. They were freaking out over it.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Because the same thing you were saying, like our moms, our tias, they just make the food and they've never seen the recipes actually written down. You know, like the white rice with the corn that everybody knows. Like you never have seen a written recipe for that, you know? Yeah. I know you were in the kitchen a lot and you used to spend a lot of time between the United States and Colima in Mexico with your grandparents. Your grandparents, they cooked a lot. It was actually a family business, right? Your grandpa sold tacos and then your grandma kind of had a little restaurant at one point.
She still does.
Oh, she still does.
It was kind of a weird experience because growing up, you know, my parents were undocumented until I was 21 when I was able to sponsor them for a green card. And when I was young, I was the only one that got to go to Mexico. Sometimes it would be by myself and sometimes it would be with an aunt or an uncle that would bring me along, but both of them were undocumented, so they never got to travel. And so whenever there was an excuse for me to go to Mexico, they would literally send me to Mexico. And I can't tell you how many times my mom said that I must have had chicken pox when I was little, because like she would literally be like, oh, he has chicken pox. So they would just send me to Colima for 2 weeks. And I grew up with mis abuelitos. And on my mom's side, mi abuelito was a salinero. So in the springtime, he would go to Cuyutlan and he would mine sea salt. And then when he wasn't doing that for the rest of the year, he had a little taco cart that he would park outside El Jardín, and he would sell tacos de adobada basically every night. And that went on for a few years up until he was injured. And then my grandma sort of stepped in, and she would sell quesos that she would make. And then she still, to this day, opens up her backyard every weekend to sell tacos and sopitos and pozole. And that's what they've been doing for most of their life.
And so did you used to help when you were little, or were you not allowed to?
Like I was. I mean, I feel like a lot of my memories from being a kid revolve around like sitting next to mi abuelito while he was selling tacos. And I feel like they've played such a huge part into food becoming such a passion for me. And just looking at the way they view food as more than just like nourishment and more of like nourishing others. I don't want to be cheesy, but like, you know, nourishing other people's souls through food. I feel like that for me has made such a huge impact. Yeah. If it makes any sense.
No, absolutely. And cooking is, I think, my favorite form of art. It really brings people together, and it's not only tasty, but it's also, you're creating an experience for people. You're creating memories. It's so sensory. And then you're also carrying on tradition, and then you're sharing your culture with people when you make food for other people, which I think is one of the most important things that you know, food can do. It's like really bring people together and give you an understanding of where they come from.
Yeah. And it's something that can help you feel like you're at home. And like when, you know, when I was in school and I was feeling super homesick, because I mean, the drive to Santana was 12 hours. So for me to see my family was kind of like a once to twice a year sort of thing. And so for me, like getting to make all of these dishes that my mom made were sort of supplementing that and helping me feel like I was back at home.
I totally understand that. You know, I find myself when I'm homesick, or when, you know, especially now, because I can't even go visit my mom because of the quarantine, because she started working in casinos again, because Vegas is whack and it's open again. I don't understand what's happening. But so we can't really hang out. So
I ended up making arroz and frijoles yesterday, like my mom makes, just to like have something, you know, to remind me of her. Yeah. And it's so important. It's so important. So, okay, so you're in school, you're around all these white people, and you're like,
oh my gosh, it was worse. It was white people with dreads.
No. Oh my God, that's the worst. White people with super bad judgment and ignorance. It's, oh my God.
if you've never been to Arcata, which is where campus is, Arcata doesn't really allow big box stores, and it's almost like you have gone back in time. Because there's just like so many hippies there, a lot of white people walking around with dreads. I remember when I would be walking into campus, there would be a guy that would walk around with a yak, and it was just like the most bizarre thing.
Wait, a yak? Like an animal?
Yeah.
No, 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 no. Wait, what?
And I'm sure if anybody else has been to Humboldt, they can, you know. They can confirm.
I think I have a feeling. I was in Southern Oregon in Ashland for like 3 or 4 months, and I think I got a taste of that. There was a lot of white people with dreads with like Peruvian sweaters on, like really proud to show them off, because they love those weird animals like llamas, yaks, alpacas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is so weird. But okay, so you're there, and then you start cooking for Billy, for your partner, and for your friends. And tell me about the first dishes you created on your own from your mom's recipes.
As far back as I can remember, there were two things that I made, and it was ceviche, which was like the easiest thing that you can ever make, because you're literally just tossing raw shrimp into lime juice and it does all the work for you. But the other thing that I made was chile rellenos, and that was such a weird experience for me, because I called my mom and I was asking her for the recipe, and she was just like, échale tantito de esto, del otro, and I was super frustrated because I just, like I said, I couldn't decipher what she was trying to tell me. and so I just got into the kitchen, and everything just sort of fell into place. I feel like having watched my mom do things over and over so much sort of just kind of led the way. And, you know, they didn't come out that bad. I'm still alive.
Man, for one of their first dishes, I feel like chile relleno is pretty complicated. That's a lot of dishes, girl. I don't know how you did that, because that's the reason I don't make chile relleno. It's like, that's a lot of dishes.
But, and I've been finding that there are so many dishes that people think are super complicated. Mm-hmm. And like, I'll do these little Insta story tutorials, and then people will be like with flan. I made flan the other day, and people were like, oh my God, I never realized how easy it is to make flan. And I feel like it just takes a little bit of encouragement for people to get into the kitchen. And then it's like, you find out that you have access to this whole other world because you're getting in there, you know?
Yeah. So when did that start? When did you start your Instagram and your Chicano Eats blog? Was that while you were still in school, or did you, after you graduated, when did that happen?
I actually started writing and like dabbling in like food writing when I was still in school. Mm-hmm. One of my friends had started a bilingual newspaper called El Leñador. And that was our junior year. And I came on my senior year as like the art director and the layout editor. And because it was still fairly new, like we didn't really have a lot of content and a lot of things that we were doing for it. So every month I was pulling recipes and shooting them to supplement the stuff that was missing. And I sort of gave that up after I graduated, because I went into marketing and it was like super corporate. And it wasn't until a few months prior to the 2016 election that I was like, you know what? I need an outlet to get creative because I'm just bored with my life and my work. Mm-hmm. And I launched Chicano Eats a few weeks before the election.
And now Chicano Eats, the brand is so strong, my friend. I mean, mean, when I first saw your Instagram and your blog, I was just so impressed by the graphic design. So that's why I totally get that you went to school for that, because it shows. But it also takes an eye, a certain, eye, because a lot of these fools go to school and they still can't push it together. But so then I remember talking to you a long time ago. When we were in comadre mode, and we call each other all the time, mm-hmm. and usually to talk about Drag Race. But I remember there was a point where you were Chicano Eats had really taken off, but then you also had a day job at the same time, and I was kind of going through a similar thing. And so it's this struggle that a lot of creative people have, is like, okay, this is really my passion project, but I got to pay rent, And so can you tell me a little bit about your journey, after school, after you got out of college?
After I had secured an internship before I left school, and it happened to be in Southern California where we were moving to. So it just kind of worked out. And I was doing that internship for about two or three months. And it was just doing marketing for this, federal nonprofit. And, that ended up turning into a full-time job. So I was there for about 2 years. And I was just, the stuff that I was doing was just kind of really basic things, like putting together brochures and maintaining websites. And I don't know. I just didn't really feel super fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And so this is where the blog came in. It was sort of an outlet for me to channel all of that extra creativity that I feel like just wasn't being used. And so I launched that in 2016, and then maybe four months after I launched the blog, Emmanuel who used to work at MeToo, mm-hmm. reached out to me and was like, "Hey, let's collab." And so we did a video, and I feel like both of us started our platforms around the same time. Because you guys also did a video with them before mine went up. And so the video went up in the spring. And the next day, I had an email from an editor from a really big publisher. And they were like, "Hey, I really love your stuff. And have you ever thought about writing a cookbook?" And I was like, "Hey, thank you so much. I'm really new into blogging, and I'm sort of still trying to find my voice. I don't really know what I want to do." And so I sort of set that on the back burner, and I just really focused on creating content for the blog. And after that video, I started getting inquiries from brands and other people that wanted to collab. And I was still doing my 9-to-5 then, and I started doing photo jobs for food.com. Mm-hmm. And so after work, I would get home, I would develop recipes for the blog, write for it, and then I would also shoot photos for them. So I would have to recreate dishes from their website and take photos. And so I did that for about a year and a half, and I sort of got to the point where I couldn't handle it. I just wasn't enjoying my life anymore, because I just felt like there was a constant pressure to be creating and to be working. And so my partner was like, "Well, maybe it's time that you focus your energy on the blog, because this is what you love to do. And, this is what you enjoy doing." And so I held off from quitting my 9-to-5 because in the back of my head, I was like, "Well, what if it doesn't work out? And it doesn't really go anywhere." And so I kept working, and it wasn't until I finished my book proposal and I secured a cookbook deal that I was like, "I'm going to quit." And so I ended up leaving my job. I think it was August of 2018. Mm-hmm. And I just went full force with, working on the book and the blog and all of the other things that I typically do as a food photographer and a stylist. And that's what I've been doing since.
Wow. How did it feel to take that leap?
Really scary. Mm-hmm. I'm not the type of person that's super, I don't know. I need to feel some sort of security. And my partner is also a freelance photographer. So I was like, if one of us doesn't have like a steady income, then like what's going to happen? Because our jobs are like, we'll have a bunch of jobs this month, but then next month we'll be kind of dead. So for me, it was just too much of a risk. So it was really scary, but I've been doing this for going on 2 years now, and I would not look back.
Yeah, it's so liberating. After, I think it took me, after I stopped like having a full-time job and doing art at the same time, it took me like 6 months to like really settle into it and be like, oh, I can do this. I'm alive. I can still, you know, I can still afford to live, you know?
Yeah.
It took a while because a lot of people romanticize it and be like, I just did it and that was the beginning of the rest of my life. And, it doesn't really feel that way, especially if you come from immigrant families who, like, we've been taught since we were young to just like hustle, 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 save, 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 mm-hmm. make sure you have 1, 2, 3, 4 backup plans, you know?
Yeah.
Porque nunca sabes.
Yeah. And yeah. That's definitely the mindset that I had for a really long time. And I was working, I mean, I'm not even joking. I was working more than 80-hour weeks because, it was just a lot that I was doing. And I just, like, I was just so frustrated and like so stressed out all the time and like just so unhappy. And then like once I decided to go full time with a blog and stuff, it was just so liberating.
And now you have a goal like to make this amazing cookbook. And so let's get into the cookbook because I am so excited to work on all these recipes. I'm going to try to make every single one of your recipes. I'm going to make my own blog that is called Favi Eats Chicano Eats. That's what it's going to be called. But it's basically separated into separate sections. The essentials, which I think is very important for people to learn how to make salsas and like know about tortillas and shit like that. Then you have botanas, tacos y tortas, platillos fuertes, and then postres and bebidas, which, oh my God, that's going to be so much fun to make those fucking desserts. But I'm actually the most excited about the essentials because I have never learned how to make my own salsas. And I'm going to be honest, it's kind of intimidated for me for some reason. Just because I think because salsas are kind of like readily available, so you don't think about making your own, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited to just jump in and see how you do it. And so when I was going through your book, I was also really excited to see how you really embrace your Chicano identity by mixing kind of the two cultures, unapologetically, right? You're really celebrating, your Chicano identity in this book. And, you know, acknowledging your identity and not being afraid to make recipes that maybe some other chefs or cooks don't deem like authentic, you know, which is something that we talk a lot about on Latinos Who Lunch is like, what even is authenticity? If this is the way that you make your shit, this is it. That's how it is, you know?
And it's the same question that I like to ask, because when you really think about what authentic means, your authentic is going to be completely different than my authentic, because authenticity is sort of defined by your own personal experiences and your surroundings. So the things that you grew up with are going to be completely different than the things that I grew up with.
Yeah, totally.
And so for me, it was almost important to sort of break that down, because honestly, food is food. And as a Chicano, I feel like the food that I make doesn't have to be traditional all of the time.
So there's a lot of history with a lot of this like inauthentic food, and I'm doing that in quotes, that we enjoy, you know, on the border or in Southern California in the Southwest, you know, which is so special and kind of unique to our culture. And then, you know, it's also a way to tell our own histories, which I think is important.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of us go through that struggle where you don't feel like you fit in anywhere. You know, you go back to Mexico and to them, you're not really Mexican enough, but then you're here and you're Mexican, but then you're not American enough. And so where do you fit in? You know? And so after sort of breaking that down and saying, well, I am who I am and I belong to both, why can't I do both? You know, you can start to thrive. And I feel like a lot of us in the food industry sort of get pigeonholed into, oh, they can only make Mexican food. Oh, or they can only make Indian food. But it's like, no, we can make the same things that the white chefs can make.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And on the same topic of authenticity, I noticed that you have 3 different pozole recipes in your book. And you know, that has been that was a great debate on Latinos Who Lunch. Like, what's your favorite? Pozole rojo, verde, or the white pozole, right? But first, before I ask you that, what kind of pozole did your grandma make? Because you mentioned that she makes pozole on the weekends.
Yeah, it's funny because in Colima, we have pozole seco, which is completely different.
What? Get into it. What does that mean?
So we traditionally have pozole blanco. And then for el recalentado, you basically take the pozole blanco and you put it on a skillet and you let it reduce until all of the caldo evaporates and the granos and the carne sort of start to get crispy. And that's pozole seco for us.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
I grew up eating nothing but pozole blanco, and I would have pozole rojo here and there whenever we went to parties. And pozole rojo has got to be my favorite.
Yeah, I think it's my favorite too. But there is something about the pozole blanco, because don't you guys put mint in that one?
I don't.
Oh, you don't? Okay, see, it's... You knew Mexico was had such a complex history and regional cuisine existed, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't realize how different the food culture is until you actually start traveling and stuff. I remember the first time I made enchiladas for Billy, the way that we have them in Colima, they're enchiladas dulces. It's a tortilla that's stuffed with picadillo. And then there's a sweet mole that goes on top of it. And so I remember the first time he had them, he was like, what is this? I'm like, those are enchiladas. And he's like, no, there's no red sauce on this.
Oh my God, that sounds so bomb though. I know. And then to top it off, I'm half Guatemalan, so an enchilada is something completely different. So I was really confused all the time as a kid. What?
Oh my gosh.
Going on here? And I'm from I'm from Durango, from El Norte. So they love their red sauces there. So enchiladas for us are just basically just cheese. It's almost they make them like a casserole. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I actually want to get into your sopes, because I feel like that's your specialty, right?
Yes, and that's another thing that's completely different in Colima. You know, everywhere else in Mexico, they're gonna be a lot thicker, and you'll usually have them with frijoles and some sort of protein, and then lechuga and cheese and whatever else. But in Colima, they're really thin, and then you top them with ground beef or with lomo or carne deshebrada, and you have this consomé that goes on top of it, and then you've got your lettuce and all of the other toppings. But yeah, that's one of my favorite things that I like to make, and it's one of the dishes that I just love to eat.
Yeah, I love sopes. I feel like they're one of the most underrated foods.
Yeah.
So now that you have this book, but we're in the middle of a pandemic and a civil rights uprising. I don't mean to laugh, but I know that it's I don't know what else to do, because we're under a really stressful times right now. But mm-hmm. I actually think this is the perfect time for this book to come out too, because people are at home now and making more food at home. And I think it's important to, you know, stay home and be safe and, you know, spend time with your family. So this is another good way to kind of connect not only with Chicano culture, but, you know, with your own people in your house.
Yeah.
Which is...
I was super bummed when everything started shutting down, because I was like, oh my gosh, my book is coming out in a few months. I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, everybody is asking me every other day, hey, are you going to be touring our city, or, you know, what's going on? And so I was kind of bummed for a little bit, but then I was like, you know what, this is I think this is going to be for the best, because people are going to be using this time to, like you said, be in the kitchen and try new things.
It's definitely made me slow down the last few months and kind of really think about like what I want to do and think about like how I've been operating the last few years under like constant stress. And now that we're kind of slowing down a little bit, I think as a entire country, I think a lot of people are having, I mean, in a positive way, having time to like think about their next moves. And so what are you thinking about now? I mean, I am just so proud of you, friend. This book, I can't even, I can't even imagine. Oh my gosh, like I'm getting emotional thinking about like your grandparents holding this book and looking at it. I'm just, it's just so amazing. But what do you want to do? What do you want to do now after this? What are you thinking about?
There's a lot.
Yeah, tell me.
I mean, I feel like I feel like I need a break. I need a long vacation. Like I stopped cooking at home because I'm just like, I've been cooking every single day for the past year and a half working on the book, and now I just feel like I'm free to just chill. But keeping the blog going, I'd love to start a YouTube channel finally. I keep saying that I'm going to do it, but then I get bombarded with projects and I just don't have the time. But I want to start that, and then I'd love to have my own show eventually. Like, that's my goal for the next 5 years is to have my own show.
Oh, my God. I see it. I see it. I can't wait. It's going to be amazing. What did you like watching cooking shows when you were a kid?
I did. Didn't have cable, so I would watch PBS a lot.
Oh, my God. Yes. What were your favorites? So, I was a PBS kid through and through. I literally watched every fucking cooking show on PBS.
I did too. There was, honestly, I feel like there were just so many.
Yeah. Did you watch Yang Can Cook?
Yes.
Jacques, what's that guy's name?
Pepin?
Jacques Pepin, yeah.
Yes.
And then his daughter, what? Why was his daughter on the show? It was so confusing.
I don't know. And then there was also Rick Bayless, but we're going to move on.
What do you mean? You don't want to talk about your TO Rick?
No, let's go. Let's go.
I've always liked cooking, and I even considered maybe, you know, going into the culinary arts when I was younger. Mm-hmm. They used to call me Chef Pepin when I was little, which I think was the chef that would come on the Spanish news. Uh-huh. I don't know. I just don't have the patience, I don't think. And I'm like, I'm just really, really messy in the kitchen. So if anybody sees me cook, they would not want to eat my food. So definitely it takes the right kind of person to like get into, you know, the culinary arts, because, man, it's a lot. But it's an incredible art to be able to share. And I mean, who doesn't like to fucking eat amazing food? You know? And so in the book, speaking of amazing food, you also talk about like substituting like American products into a lot of the food that you do, which I really love. Because you know that I'm obsessed with like Tex-Mex food and like Taco Bell and shit. Do you have any examples off the top of your head? I'm just asking for a friend, you know, like of things that, you know, might be good substitutes for like traditional dishes.
Like I have chotriotes con chicken, which is my take on chicken and dumplings, mm-hmm. where you basically are taking caldo de pollo and you're making these little dumplings called chotriotes, which are made out of corn masa, and you make like a little hole with your finger inside of them, and you let them cook with a broth, and that's my Chicano take on chicken and dumplings. And then you also have the mac and queso fundido. Oof. Which is taking queso fundido and macaroni and cheese and squishing them together, so you have this really saucy mac and cheese topped with crispy mushrooms and then chorizo, and it's just God. Yeah.
And then imagine it's... sprinkling Doritos on top of that. Imagine.
Oh my gosh.
Do you know who Jasmine Orlando is?
No.
She has this TikTok, and the other day she was on there and she was just eating a Taki, and she said, "Imagine being Latina and eating a Taki." And that was it. That was her TikTok post.
Oh my gosh. What an inspiration. I mean, that's yeah, there's influencers out there who have that as a personality.
There was this thread on Twitter recently about how all Chicano influencers are just like making stuff with hot Cheetos, and it was really funny because Frito-Lay can't even pay for all the advertising they get from all these Chicanos. I'm like, so you're, so as a Chicano influencer, most of these people are like, okay, your personality is bad makeup, Takis, Takis and hot Cheetos, that's it. But we love it. You know,
I can't even think about eating hot Cheetos because it just gives me, it gives me heartburn.
I had to stop because for a while that was my go-to. I just always had hot Cheetos on deck. But
yeah,
you know, I'm getting older and you know, it's just not, it just doesn't work out anymore.
I know. I hit 30 in March and now I can't eat cheese and like dairy and like hot Cheetos.
Come over to the vegan side. You know that I'm a representative of all the vegan community.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, hello. I'm a vegan influencer.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, you know what, since you're a representative from the vegan community, yes, you should try the pambazos, cuz that's a pretty solid recipe. Where you can just substitute the crema and the cheese for like your vegan or your vegan favorites, and you have a torta that's completely vegan.
Get into it. What's a pambazo for people that don't know?
A pambazo is this. It's a type of like a roll.
Uh huh.
And you dip that into a guajillo sauce, and then you put it on like a flat griddle. You let it crisp up, and then you stuff it with papas con chorizo, and it's just, it's so good. And in the book, I don't use regular pork chorizo, I use soyrizo, like as a good alternative, because, you know, nowadays you have friends who have all sorts of different diets, and not everybody eats meat, so you gotta always have some sort of substitute.
And you also
it's really good.
You also have a recipe to make your own chorizo mix, right?
Well, there's two things in the book. Uh-huh. You have like the chorizo spice mix, yes, which is a blend of spices that mimics the taste of chorizo. That I like to use on roasted vegetables. But in the book, I also have these chorizo meatballs, where you can easily take the adobo from the meatballs, yeah, and mix that with ground pork for your own homemade chorizo.
Oh my God, it's so bomb, dude. Like, I honestly... You sent me a little pack of the chorizo mix, and I made quesadillas. I made quesadillas the other night because I'm staying at my grandma's house right now because she's in Mexico still, so I'm house sitting, and my grandma always has queso ranchero on deck, like in the freezer.
Oh my gosh.
I've already gone through two wheels of it.
Oh my gosh.
It's only been 3 months that I'm here, but I've already gone through two wheels of it. I'm on the second one, actually. I'm almost done with it, but... It's just like, it's so bomb. That cheese is so good, but it's kind of that cheese que no tiene mucho sabor, you know? It's meant to be like mixed.
It's like super creamy.
Yeah, it's like meant to be mixed into like beans and stuff.
Yeah, like queso fresco.
No, no, it's a harder cheese, but it just, it's almost kind of like it's not sour. I don't know how to explain it, but it's a good melting cheese. So you make quesadillas. I just like to like fry them up a little bit and like make them crispy with the cheese. And like I usually put onions in the middle or like jalapeno, whatever I have.
Uh-huh.
But I got, I had some machaca, vegan machaca, of course. And this cheese that I'm saying is also vegan. But I was making quesadillas two nights ago, and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna try this mix, and I sprinkled the chorizo mix into my quesadillas, and they were so bomb. It is delicious. So I'm excited to, you know, for the vegan community, I'm excited to put that in other, yeah, like you said, roasted veggies. I already know I'm gonna put it in potatoes in the morning with eggs, vegan eggs, and, you know, for breakfast. It's gonna be amazing. I'm so excited. And or chorizo like micheladas. I'm ready. So,
oh my gosh. Let's not get a little too crazy.
I know. I'm sorry. I get carried away. And also what I'm excited about is to clean out my oven and not use it as a storing rack to make some of these desserts you have in the book. I swear, ever since I was little, I didn't know that like our oven actually worked, you know, because my family never used it. But I'm so excited to make some of these recipes in your book, man. They look so bomb, and I've never had the courage really to like bake stuff, but you know what? You make it look easy and it's beautiful. So I'm going to take the plunge into some of these recipes. Oh my God, the dulce de leche choco flan. Girl.
It's so good. And I feel like for any of you who don't really cook often or haven't really cooked but really want to get into the kitchen, I would just suggest, you know, reading the recipe a few times and then lay out all of your ingredients and even keep like a little checklist. That way you are keeping track of everything that you've already used just in case you happen to miss something. Because let me tell you, there's times where I'm just like working super fast and I'll forget to add like the vanilla or like the salt. And for those of you who are just starting, it'll be really helpful for you to just keep track of everything that you've been using.
Well, before I let you go, I just want to thank you for being on the show once again. Finally, I can't believe it's taken so long.
Oh my gosh.
I'll have to have you on again so that we can really kiki with Babalito.
Thank you.
Just catch up again. But where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me across all social media as @ChicanoEats. And then my blog is www.chicanoeats.com. And you can find my book, Chicano Eats, Recipes from My Mexican-American Kitchen, wherever books are sold.
That's Chicano Eats, Recipes from My Mexican-American Kitchen. Ding! Oh my gosh!
Oh my gosh. And next time, you know what? Let's hold off on inviting Babalito. That way we can talk about musicals and have a day.
Oh my God. Yes. Yes. I forgot. Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, and we didn't even get to like what instrument did you play in band again?
I played the
Okay, hold on. Let me think. Was it the trombone? No, it was a woodwind.
Yeah, it was a woodwind.
Alto sax?
No.
No, what was it? What is it?
The clarinet.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
What?
And then I was a drum major, and then I did marching band in college, which was, it was like such a good experience. It was like, did you ever used to watch Drumline?
Yeah, of course. With Nick Cannon?
It was like, yeah.
With the Nick Cannon? Of course.
The one and only? Yeah, it was like that. It was like, I remember I would watch it and be like, yeah, when I get to college, I'm going to be in marching band and it's going to be so cool.
And was it?
I mean, we were a bunch of nerds, but it was still cool.
You know, my experience was totally different because my high school was super competitive. Uh-huh. And so, you know what? Oh, no, you're younger than me. Well, maybe we did compete at one point together.
We weren't that good. Our high school wasn't that good.
Because we would go to Rancho Cucamonga a lot to compete. They had a big competition in Rancho Cucamonga, I remember.
Our school was predominantly Hispanic, and we never really had funds to do anything. So we would just go to like the little local competitions.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that you guys formed a banda and you would play at quinceañeras. Oh,
no, now they do.
See?
Now they do.
I love that.
My old band teacher formed a banda and they play during like the lunchtime. And it's like, oh my gosh, you guys just, I wish I was there.
That's amazing. Oh, yeah. But then I got to college and like UNLV doesn't have a really great football team. So we were just like, marching band was just like a drinking club. We just drank the whole time. I wasted so much of my money just being drunk. But I got a scholarship for playing the tuba. Oh, so, you know, whatever. Yeah, you definitely have to come back on because we have to talk about all this shit. For real. All right.
All righty, pues.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Toodaloo, 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 toodaloo. And we're back. Oh, it was so nice catching up with our old friend. I remember when we first started Latinos Who Lunch, he was one of our first friends on Instagram.
¿Te acuerdas cuando lo conocimos,
and we met him. Would. Yes, of course.
It was right after DragCon.
Yeah.
And he's like, you guys are so extra.
I know. I was like high-key offended because I wasn't even being extra. I thought I was being like, oh, he's a very calm guy. I'm just going to kind of tone it down. And he kept saying, y'all are too much. I'm like, oh, if you knew me. Oh, bitch, did I tell you this? I think I did tell you guys on the show. Maybe not on the show, but I was scouted to do this reality TV show kind of thing. And I got to the point where I had to like kind of go do screen testing. And so I know. I can't believe I even tried to do that because I was so fucking busy last year. But I went and they were like, okay, like they had me kind of like in a confessional situation. And they're like, well, just answer these questions honestly. Like, how would you answer them? And I just started talking like myself, like this. And then the producer looks at me and he's like, let me see, how can I say this? This show isn't on Bravo. This show is on, I'm not going to say the network, mm-hmm. but this show is on this network. Like, you don't have to do all that. Whoa. And I'm like, do all what? And he's like, well, you can just be yourself. And I'm like, I am being myself. Like, basically, they were telling me to, like, tone it down.
Wow.
And I was like, you know how fucking exhausted I am? I traveled all the way to fucking Universal Studios. Oh, now you know what it is. I came all the way to fucking Universal Studios to talk to you guys and you're telling me to tone it down?
Yeah.
Like, I'm fucking tired. I am toned down, bitch. You want to know how I really am? Needless to say, I didn't get that gig.
That's funny. Oh my god.
But yeah, we're a little extra, okay? Let us live life to the fullest. But no, I think that was just like, because a lot of people listen to the show and do, you know, and sometimes they expect the opposite. Then they expect us to be on all the time.
All the
so
time.
When they meet us and we're just like, hello, nice to meet you, they're like, you fake ass motherfucker. But because we know Chicano eats, so it's like, oh, he's already my friend. Like, I'm just going to be myself, you know? So that was it.
Yeah. My favorite story is not even from me. It's actually from my husband. So
what happened?
So he used to work for, you know, like for Me Too, Emmanuel Ramos Barajas, and they were going to do a video with Chicano Eats, and he was getting all his props and all his stuff from the car. And he gave my boo the mole cake, the cake. So he's carrying it and taking it to set, and as they get ready to shoot, boom, que se le cae el pastel. And
wait, Emmanuel dropped the cake that he made
for the photo shoot. And bitch, you know, my boo is he was aware of the Instagram. That shit is pristine and shiny and perfect. So he's like, oh my God.
So, I would have had a fucking heart attack.
I had
bitch.
A heart attack listening to that listening to that story.
My blood pressure just went up.
Yes. So I think it turned out right. Like, they picked it up, lo limpiaron y la chingada, and it turned out well. But imagínate, güey.
Knowing, they were able to save the cake?
Yeah, they were able to save the cake and it was fine. But imagínate el horror. Every time we talk about, like, every time he comes out of conversation or whatever, he's like, my story about Chicano Eats is that I drop a cake right before a photo shoot.
What was his reaction?
He was just like, he freaked out. He's like, he froze because, like, I think at the moment he's just like, he's thinking of the Instagram like aesthetic, you know? It's just like, yeah. Oh my fucking God. And this is the mole cake, so you best believe it took fucking hours to to get, but anyway, so every time
Dios Santo.
Every time I think of that story. But anyway, thank you so much, Esteban, for all the years of support. And thank you very, very, very much. And he has a new book that's exciting. That's so, so cool.
Yes. Order that shit. It's going to be out soon. I can't wait. And yes. I can't wait to make all those recipes, man. It's, you know, now is the time to really flex on flex on your neighbors, flex on your family.
That's right.
And you know, people are bored of eating the same shit over and over again. This is a great opportunity to have fun with the in the kitchen. Okay, do you have any recs, Babs?
Yes, and it's one of those old recommendations. But yes. Again, it's our podcast. I don't give a fuck. And this is what I've been listening to, so I'm true to myself. Have you listened to Combo Chimbita?
Yes.
I am so fucking obsessed with this band. I don't know why it came to my radar. This album just came out this year, but it's called Aomale. And I went in a rabbit hole listening to all the, looking at all the videos. They're amazing. And I was just listening to the second album and the first album, Abya Yala. Bitch, it's punk. It's Colombian fucking punk. This is Afro-Colombian. They have those roots over there. They not only play homage, they fucking make something completely different. And it is just the best. I can't stop. I've been listening to these two albums for the past 2 months nonstop, and I was just thinking about it. I was like, I have never recommended them, and they have been present for so long. So again, both anything that they produce, Combo Chimbita, Aomale, and Abya Yala, Google it. Amazing, amazing, amazing music. And one of my dreams is to have them in the podcast in one day, and I know it's gonna happen. So if you're listening, let's do it.
Manifestation.
That's right.
¿Y tú? Okay. Well, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts lately, and I just want to give a couple shout outs. Some of our friends have started podcasts in the recent past. Shout out to our friend Wilote. They have a podcast called Trials and Transformations.
Nice.
So giving them a big shout out. And you know, shout out to all our Latinx podcast crew. They're amazing. Also, a really great podcast that's really cool and well produced. It's actually a New York Times podcast called 1619, which is the year that the first slave ship was brought to the Americas, with about, you know, 20 to 30 enslaved individuals. So it is a really fascinating podcast to learn about the history of the United States enslaved people from Africa and how it became the most influential and biggest like economic power in the world because of slave labor. And that's just something that they never teach us in school. There's even an episode about how American pop culture is Black pop culture.
Pues sí.
And that's how it's been since the very, very, very... We're talking about when these motherfuckers were wearing, you know, these white men were walking around still wearing wigs, you know? Like...
it's those powder wigs que les daban cancer and nobody said anything.
Thank God. They need to start wearing them again, please. Y chingues un bote de bleach while you're at it. Para que se les quite el virus, cabrones. But, just kidding. Not really. Maybe. Okay. But yeah, so 1619, it's a 6-episode like series. It's really easy to listen to and you learn so much. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Any more recs, Babs?
I just want to remind everybody that the slave trade is something that started from Portugal and Spain. And we always forget, like, Spanish fucked everything up. Like, that's kind of what we're trying to do with our YouTube channel, Unsettling Journeys. We're trying to trace all that history and how this idea of mestizaje erases that. It erases our African ancestries, our indigenous ancestries, like a lot of different things that we don't talk about. But yes, like the slave trade, basically this whole story started in like 1455 when Portugal went to Africa, and then the Pope is like, yep, this is yours, I'll give it to you. And with that came people, and then 1492, and then the Caribbean, and then the United States, and y valió madre todo el pedo. So we have to remember that a lot of this oppressive systems comes from there. We're part of that history. As Latinos, we are part of that same fucked up history. So don't forget that.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, around the world, this is what I learned big time from this podcast, is a lot of people from around the world benefited from slavery in the United States, because even though the United States was one of the last like countries to have such a huge slave labor force, all these people that outlawed slavery, like in the UK or in Europe, they were still benefiting from that labor by paying the United States to import cotton and different goods like that. So it's like, no son los inocentes over there.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yes. Never forget.
Never. So, yeah, that's my rec. Anything else, Babs?
That's it.
All right. As always, you can visit us at latinoswholunch.com. If you have a moment, please leave us a review. We're almost at 1,000 reviews, folks. 5 stars.
5 stars solamente.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And visibility leads to representation and representation. Oh, that's your part.
Thank you for taking my line.
Anytime. Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela, Emmanuel Ortega, and Maite Sosa. Music by the band Balloon. I'm Favi Fav.
And I'm Babelito.
Come on, Babelito.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.
Bye.